Well, good evening, everyone. I'm Claire Sawyer. I'm the programmer for young people here at Adelaide Writers Week. It's my absolute pleasure to have you coming out on a Tuesday evening. It's the first time we've done an YA event in the evening specifically for young adults, and we couldn't have better guests. I'm going to leave the moderator, Margot McGovern, to introduce Lynette, but in the meantime, I'd of course like to pay my deep respects to the custodians of this land, the Kaurna people, who are the traditional owners of the Adelaide Plains. And I'm delighted that we're here, that stories are being told on Kaurna land, and I'm delighted to have all of you amongst the people here listening to Margot and Lynn in their conversation about the company she keeps. What I'd like to do first, though, is actually tell you a little bit about Margot McGovern, who will be taking through the moderating of this. And I'd also like to remind you that Lynette Noni, our lovely guest, is going to be signing her books over there. The book tent does have copies of Lynette's books, so please support the book tent, support the festival, purchase some titles and have them signed by Lynette. That would be great. And in fact, by Margot as well, who's also an author. So Margot is a YA and horror author based in Adelaide, South Australia, and her debut YA novel, Neverland, was shortlisted for the Text Prize and the Adelaide Festival Awards for Literature. Her second novel, Between Us Girls, will be published in 2024. So over to you, Margot and Lynette. Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you so much to all of you for coming tonight. It is my absolute pleasure to introduce Lynette Noni. So after studying journalism, academic writing and human behaviour at university, Lynette Noni finally ventured into the world of fiction. She is now a full-time writer and the number one best-selling author of the six-book young adult fantasy series, The Madoran Chronicles. Yay! the award-winning YA duology, Whisper, and the globally renowned YA fantasy trilogy, The Prison Healer. In 20... give a cheer for it. It's amazing. In 2019, Lynette's book Whisper won the Australian Book Industry Award for Small Publishers' Children's Book of the Year, as well as the Gold Inky Award, which at the time was Australia's only Teen Choice Book Award. Her newest series, The Prison Healer, won the 2022 ABIA Award for Book of the Year for Older Children and was shortlisted for the 2022 Indie Book Awards. It was also a finalist in the 2022 Audi Awards and a CBCA Notable Mention for Older Readers Book of the Year. The Prison Healer was also voted in at number two on the Better Readings Kids Top 50 list for 2022, right behind Harry Potter. And most recently, the final book in the trilogy, The Blood Traitor, won the 2023 ABIA Award for Book of the Year for Older Children. Collectively, Lynette's books have been published in 19 different countries and counting. That is quite the CV.
Actually, I'm like embarrassed right now. I don't remember any of that.
Well, I guess my first question is, what prompted you to start writing, and specifically to start writing young adult fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up as a reader. I always loved reading books. But that said, I really didn't like fantasy books. My brother was an avid fantasy reader. He's 2 years older than me. He's my only sibling. And I was like, that's his thing. He came out of the womb reading The Lord of the Rings, and that's cool. I'm a horse girl. I'm going to read The Saddle Club and the Thoroughbred series and the Pony Pals. And when I'm done with those, I jump straight up to like equine science when I was like 5 years old because I couldn't find enough horse books. And so that was my thing. But when I was in year seven in Queensland, so I was about 12 years oldish, we had to read Ober Newton by Isabel Carmody, which Isabel is an Australian author, and Ober Newton is technically a YA fantasy book. Kind of before YA was really a thing, I would say, which is the only reason why I said technically. But I did not want to read this book that had, I was like, it doesn't have horses in it. But I also didn't want to fail year seven English. So I read Ober Newton and my mind just exploded. I was like, there's magic and these people can communicate telepathically to each other and they're in another world. And it was just it just captivated me so much. And so from there, I went on to read any kind of fantasy that I could get my hands on. I jumped straight to Narnia, obviously, and then I was part of the Harry Potter generation and I grew up with that. And then I jumped straight to like adult, like high fantasy, so The Magician by Raymond E. Feist, The Seven Waters trilogy by Australian author Juliet Marillier, Trudy Canavan's Magician, Black Magician. Like, I just... anything that had fantasy in it, I just devoured. But I still had no intention of writing a book. I just loved to read and never even thought about writing. But then came the day, I was in my early 20s, and Twilight had kind of taken over the world, and I was loving reading this YA genre. There were so many books that had come out because publishers were like, oh, teenagers want to read. And so there were so many books saturating the market. And they were very heavy on the vampires because they were like, oh, they just want sparkly things, so let's give them the sparkly things. And so I was reading all these books that I was enjoying different parts of them, but I just couldn't find all those things. I wanted all these different elements in one book, and I couldn't find that one book. And so I thought, why don't I try to write the book I want to read? And so I made a list of all the things I wanted. I wanted it to be set in a magical world. I wanted there to be a school that had a kind of magic that wasn't quite magic. I wanted there to be dragons. I wanted there to be immortal, warriors or villains or princes or royals or, you know, all of this kind of stuff. Like, all of these things, I just made a list of them. And I started writing, and Akane, which is my first book, ended up becoming a mashup of all those things.
And can I ask as well about your process for getting published? Was it like an easy thing? Did it take a long time?
Sorry, what?
I mean, that's how it works in publishing. You just like write a book and you send it off, and like 2 minutes later, it's an international bestseller, right? That's
absolutely
how that goes.
Absolutely. This is how it works. I did not know what world you live in. It's a fantasy world, that's for sure. I got hundreds and hundreds of rejections for Akane. I couldn't even get an agent for it, and which was a step before getting a publisher. It was at an interesting time. I'd said that Twilight had come out, and so we're kind of past that by that stage. It was more Divergent and The Hunger Games, and so suddenly publishers wanted post-apocalyptic stories. They wanted dystopians. That's what they were after. So they were kind of merging out of the vampires and merging into the dystopians. And publishers are they try to predict what the market is going to be, and they kind of ignore anything else, or they just don't have as much faith in things that they don't think are working. And at that time, the feedback I kept getting was, this is a really solid story, really great plot, really great characters, but there is no market for young adult fantasy at the moment. And that was just what I kept getting across the board. And it was encouraging, and it was also really disheartening, because I was like, if they're saying good things about this story and they're actually liking it, but they still can't publish it, what's going to happen here? But in the end, obviously it got published, but it did take 3 years. I didn't get an agent for it. I ended up being a slush pile author. So I was walking through. I kind of was like, I have to put this aside. No one is after YA fantasy. This is after 3 years. I was like, it's not a thing at the moment. And just for a little bit of context, books like Throne of Glass, that kind of really revamped YA fantasy, hadn't started to come out at that point. Is that a dog? Or if it was a human, I'm so sorry. It could have been a sneeze. We got weird audio up here. I don't have a dog. I really want one. So. Okay. I am professional. Okay.
There wasn't much YA fantasy around at the time.
No, there was like none. And it is a dog.
It's a really cute dog, just for anyone who can't see it.
Concentrate. So I thought, I'm going to put this book aside. I was writing something else at the time as well. It was more commercial, I guess. I was getting a lot more interest from agents. But I was walking through Big W one day and I saw a really shiny cover of a brand new book. And I'm such a cover snob. And I was like, ooh, it's pretty. And I picked it up, and it was a brand new YA fantasy by a completely new Australian publisher called Pantera Press. And they, at the time, were open to unsolicited submissions, which meant you didn't have to have an agent. And so I was like, all right, I'll give this one last go. There's no harm in trying it. And so I submitted it. A month later, I got like, oh, you're through to the next round. I was like, yeah, I've heard that for the last 3 years. And I forgot all about it. And then seven months later, out of the blue, I got an email saying, we love this. We would really like to publish not just this book, but the entire series. And I was like, someone's hacked into my emails. I thought it was spam or a joke, but it ended up being real. A month later, I was meeting them and signing contracts. And yeah, that was 10 years ago last month. So, whew.
Amazing. So you said when you wrote Akane, you kind of just put everything that you wanted to see in a fantasy book into that story. But do you have a particular starting point? Like, you know, you're very famous for your characters. Do you start with a character, or do you start with a problem that needs to be solved, or is it the world? Do you have sort of something that kind of gets you going?
Yeah, I feel like for all three series that I have out at the moment, it is a different answer. So with Akane, it was definitely those things I said before. I envisioned the world and I knew that I wanted there to be this school. I knew the kind of elements that I wanted in it. So I was like, okay, who am I going to have as the main character? And I actually had to fiddle with it with that for a while. I wrote I had no idea what I was doing. I say that as if I do now. I still have no idea what I'm doing. But, you know, when I was first playing around with Alex, who had a completely different, I think she was like Lexi or Alexia or something, like she had a few it took me a while to kind of get her character. At first she was just so angsty, and I was like, I got maybe a couple of chapters in and I was like, I do not want this angsty moody teenager in my head for so long. I just didn't like her. Well, now I know it's her voice, or the voice of the writing, but back then I was like, I just don't like this as a person. So I had to figure out who I wanted to be in that world, and that's how she came to me. The Whisper series, though, that was definitely the character came to me first, and actually the very first line of that first book was what came to me and inspired the whole series. I got this first line, and it was, they call me Jane Doe. And I was like, who calls you Jane Doe? Why are they calling you Jane Doe? Is Jane Doe your name, or is it not your name? And if it's not your name, what is your real name, and why don't they call you that? And so I had all these questions, and then I continued with the prologue, which is only about a page and a half. And during that prologue, she kind of, it's in first person, and she kind of refers to herself as a monster. I'm like, why are you a monster? What have you done? Have you done anything? So she as a character came to me so strongly, and I was like, I'm going to keep asking these questions and figure out who you are, and her story evolved that way. Whereas the prison healer, both the world and the character came to me at the same time, because it was based strongly on a real person who I met while I was traveling. It was a passing conversation. We had a meal together. We had mutual friends. I don't even know her name. And she was telling me, she worked for like the United Nations, but when she was younger, when she was a teenager, her dad, she grew up in, I don't even remember what country, but in like a really dangerous country. And her dad was seen shaking hands with a member of an opposing religious faction, and he was sent to jail for that. But it wasn't just for shaking hands, just that's it. And so they were devastated. But not only that, she and her entire, like her mom and her two sisters, were also sent to a different prison. So her dad was sent to like the torture prison. She and her mom and her sisters were sent to like a detention kind of center. And they thought, this is a mistake, we're going to get out in a day. But they ended up being in that prison for 5 years. And so while she was there, she taught herself English, she got a law degree, she buddied up to the guards, and she got like special favors and stuff. So she was telling me this story, like actual real life story, and I was like, I was so affected by it. And then I kind of forgot about it. I was traveling, I moved on with life. It stayed with me, obviously, but it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to write a book about this. Like, I'm not, I don't go out searching for stories. But then a couple of months later, 6 months later, I was over in Western Australia for a writers' festival, and I had a day off the festival, and everyone said, go visit Fremantle Prison. And I was like, this is a weird recommendation, but okay. And so I went out there, and it's kind of a heritage listed site. And the thing is that at Fremantle Prison, they have all these tunnels beneath the prison, because the inmates had to dig these tunnels in order to make water for the prison as a water source. If you've read my Prison Healer series, you'll know that that's in the book. And so I was in this tunneling tour beneath the earth, totally terrified because I'm claustrophobic like anything. And we're in these little canoes paddling through these tunnels full of water. And they turned off all the lights. By all the lights, I mean we only had headlamps on, and so it was just, that's it. I was like, I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die down here. No one's gonna know. And I was just in this. I just had this sense of, I just felt like the agony and the misery and the torment of these inmates. I was like, I need to set a book in a prison. And while I thought of that, her story came straight back to me. So they both just joined up. And then I did a lot of research and I put in the magic and the trials and stuff. But yeah, that's a very long answer to your simple question about whether the characters of the world come to me first.
Excellent. It's so interesting to hear. And just sort of thinking about the prison healer and being set in a prison and going to the Fremantle prison in one of the, I won't say where because it's a bit of a spoiler, but Sydney's Q Station plays a big role in the Whisper duology. And then all of your books, they do start in these kind of institutional settings, whether they're sort of positive or negative. So you've got Akane, the magical school, and then you've got the prison, you've got Zallendorf prison, and then you've got the kind of secret government sort of, I don't even know what to call Lengard, but in Whisper you have Lengard, which is kind of like this secret government organisation. So what is it that you think that draws you to these kind of institutional settings? Why do you like to put your characters in those places, do you think?
I mean, I think it came from, so I started with the Midoran Chronicles, and this was such an expansive world. In the first book, we are in a school, yes, but, you know, from the second book, we go out and we visit more of the world, and then the third book, we visit a whole heap more of the world in a different way. I'm like, oh, spoilers. And then fourth book onwards, we see so much more of the world. And then the fifth book, we actually go to another world. So when I started writing Whisper, I'm like, I swear there's a point to me just saying that. When I started writing Whisper, I was probably around the fourth-ish book of the Midoran Chronicles that I'd written. And I just desperately needed something to kind of rein in that. I was like, I've been dealing with a lot of expansive world building. So I would like to have something that is set more in a confined kind of space. And so, but also, as I mentioned before, I didn't know Jane's story and why she was a monster and why she was kind of entrapped in this government facility. And so that expanded as well, and we got to know the surroundings of where she is. And then there's a lot of like catacombs and Q Station. The reason I laugh before is because I visited Q Station once, and then that ended up being in the story. And after it was in the story, I went back to make sure that I had, remembered enough of it to make it reasonably real if someone was to visit. And I went back with some friends who are visiting from Canada, and Q Station, Quarantine Station, if anyone's ever been there, it's a I'm a baby. I Margot writes like horror. I can't stand horror in any way. I'm such a chicken. And Q Station, they do ghost tours, and that's how you visit. And so I was there with these two Canadian friends. One's a police officer and one's a government meanie. I say meanie because that one, where we're in this, like, we're getting this, like, intense ghost story in the dark, and we're hearing about this ghost that did whatever, and he just, like, ran his hand down my arm, and I just screamed, and everyone else on the tour bolted out of the room. It was just highly embarrassing. And I'd forgotten all about that until just now. Yeah, I'd forgotten Q Station was even in the book. I've obviously repressed it.
I think it stood out to me because I've done the Q Station ghost tour, and it was one of the most terrifying experiences my life.
That makes me feel so much better because obviously you can handle it, like horror stuff, and I feel better about it now. I thought I would be cool the second time. That's just like these Canadians, you know. they were just like, well, this is obviously fake. I'm like, what? But anyway, and then when I went into writing The Prison Healer, I wanted to challenge myself. You know, I'd completed the Midoran Chronicles by then, and the Whisper duology both were coming out that year. And I wanted to see if I could set a world, like a world within a prison. And obviously the second and third books go beyond the prison and we see a lot more of the world. But I wanted to challenge myself because with every new book I write, I like to try and challenge myself, and I'm almost finished one at the moment, and oh my goodness, it is like broken my brain. But I'm so excited for the world building of it. It's something I've never tried to like do before. But I hope that answers your question in a really winding way.
I think it does, yeah. I think something you're very good at, and what absolutely drew me in, so Whisper was the first of your books that I read, and that prologue is just like, I was, from like the time I finished reading that, I was like, Lynette Noni is my new favorite author. I need to read absolutely everything because it's just, it is so intriguing and you just have to keep going. And your stories have this way of kind of, they start really small and they kind of just open out and out and out. And as they do, the story kind of twists and turns. And I think some of the biggest twists come with
the characters and how we find out about their shifting alliances, and often their identities are not really, you know, they're not who they seem to be. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about your characters and how, because you use these large casts and your characters do change a lot throughout your series as well. So how do you keep track of all of that?
Well, I mean, from a practical level, I use a program called Scrivener, which just helps me like note things like eye color, hair color, or like facts about them. If someone likes chocolate or if someone's allergic to bunnies or whatever, stuff like that, I can list this stuff like that. But from like a, like I guess an emotional connection kind of level, or how they intertwine with the other characters, I think a lot of it is getting to know them as you go along. I feel like, you know, I only ever write I'm gonna have add something to this in a second. I've only, my current published books aside from Caldoris and We Three Heroes are only ever in the perspective from one person. We Three Heroes is a novella collection and it focuses on three different characters from the main series, and Caldoris also does a similar thing because it's a novella collection, sort of short stories. So they don't, you know, they don't really kind of count. The main series that I write, The Menoran Chronicles, is told from Alex's point of view. Whisper is told from Jane's point of view. I keep doing this because Jane's not her real name. Most of you probably figured that out by how weird I've been about this. And then The Prison Healer is by Kiva's point of view. And so in order to kind of keep the characters, doing what they do, you get to know them through the main character's eyes. It's similar to how you build a world and you step through it, you know, you unveil it as you go. I feel like you get to know characters very, for me personally, I use a lot of dialogue to get to know my characters. I think it's a really great tool for character development because you can tell if someone, there's a difference between saying he was funny to actually having him say something that's a bit witty. And you can tell, like, you want to try and aim, for any writers, you want to be showing it rather than telling it, because it's when that heart is there, that's when readers connect to it. And so I personally am very heavy on my character development in my books. I try to, but that's because the books that I love the most, the ones that have stayed with me the most throughout the years, are the ones where I've fallen in love with the characters. And there has to be a good story as well. You know, it can be frustrating if it's just character driven and there's no plot, but I do a lot of work with my characters, and not just my main characters. I feel like I want to get to know the secondary characters well as well. And so the tools for doing that, to kind of answer your question, are you get to know the actors if they're real people. You know, these are little humans. And so in my head, you know, I know that with Alex, her best friends are Jordan and Bear, but how did that happen? This is back in my really early writing days, and it kind of happened instantly, and right, like, I have trouble rereading it, kind of, like, oh, cringe. But I know a lot of people love that book, and it's
excellent. I think, like, authors, you know, you always think, oh, my writing's terrible, but then everyone else is like, this is the most incredible thing ever.
Well, thank you. But I just kind of feel like they were kind of like insta besties. And that's what she needed at the time. She'd been lonely for very long. So if two people had just kind of adopted her, she's like, okay, I'm going to go with this. But then she meets, you know, other people. And as those people come into her life, she gets to know them for better or for worse. Similar with Kiva as well, and The Prison Healer. Like, we know that she's been doing the opposite. She's been keeping people away from her. She knows that everyone's going to die. The closest person to her is Tip, who's this, I'm going to say, 11-year-old boy. That might not be how old he is.
He's 11.
Let me go. And he's just, he's sunshine in human form. And I needed him because the prison is so horrible. And so I needed a little bit of light for that. And then otherwise it's just Mott, this kind of grumpy morgue master man who has like bad history. I mean, these people are in a prison for a reason. They've done some nasty stuff. Except for Tip. He just wouldn't let go of his mum who stole bread or something. I can't remember. She did like nothing. I can't remember.
You were really cruel putting him in there. That was really mean.
I know, right?
I guess awful. Also though, your characters, I think one of the real strengths of your storytelling is you do really make sure that your characters have to learn through their mistakes. Like, you give them these opportunities to fail, but then, you know, it doesn't matter
what your characters do or how like seemingly evil they become, I feel like you make a real effort to get to know them and to let the reader get to know them, and also to provide them these opportunities to do better and to redeem themselves. And it's so lovely. And I think you don't just do that with the hero, you do it with the secondary characters as well. Is that like an intentional thing, giving them these kind of trials throughout that they can kind of fail or succeed at?
I mean, I don't sit there going, what evil thing can I do for them today? But I feel like every book, you know, the main character for sure, but also the characters around them, I like to think they had some kind of growth throughout a single book, but also across a series. And a lot of that happens with, with them maturing in certain ways. Sometimes it is twisting, I guess, in a sense. Some people who maybe you thought were good maybe aren't so good, but others who you thought weren't good maybe are good. People change. Like, this is human nature, is that we change, we grow, we evolve, we develop. And this is us, not just fictional characters. And I feel like, you know, I'm representing that in my little fictional people, because that is what humanity is all about. And I think that's why it's important to me, because otherwise you have two-dimensional characters and nothing kind of internally happens with them on their journey. And I don't want to read that. So, you know, some people do, and that's cool. I love that we all have different things that we love to read, but when I read a book, I get invested in characters and I want to learn with them, I want to grow with them, and I want to see them overcome things. And so to the best of my ability, I try to put that into my own books.
Yeah. The books also, I think across all three series, healing plays a really important role. Like, I just made a note as I was reading, I was like, these characters get hurt like a lot. But, you know, there is sort of literal healing, but there's also sort of figurative healing. So I wondered if you could talk a bit about the role of healing and also its connection with magic in your books as well.
Well, I mean, look, they're in fantasy worlds, so there's swords and there's dragons and there's combat lessons in the Midoran Chronicles, and there's like a death prison in the Prison Healer. They're gonna get hurt. Like, you know, I don't think I have a book where I don't cheat in some way when it comes to when they get hurt, because I get frustrated with injuries. I'm like, if someone breaks a wrist, I'm not going to give them 6 to 8 weeks of time until they heal. Actually, you'll notice this in my books, and it's so unrealistic. It's the most unrealistic thing. And I'm like, okay, there's dragons and stuff, so there's not, you know, there's a lot of unrealistic things in my books. But the most unrealistic health thing in my books is, and in any books, in any fantasy books you read, when someone gets knocked out, then they're up again and running through a battle. Like, it's just, I have a friend, he's an author, his name is Alan Baxter. He's one of the grandest kung fu masters in the world, like, genuinely. I'm not just saying he's amazing, he actually has, like, he's like one of three people at that level. And he runs this class, like this writing workshop called Write, as in W, The Fight, Write, as in R. I can see it in my head. I don't know if it made sense to you, but it's called Write, The Fight, Write. And it's because he, you know, he's a combat master, and he writes a lot of action books and fantasy books and horror books. And the thing is, you know, I'm always talking to him about, you know, I've got this weapon and this weapon, what's my opening move or whatever. But the thing he always tells me, we don't have a repeated conversation about it, but one thing that frustrates him when he's reading is concussions are so serious. They were like, my mum got not even a complete concussion, but just hit her head pretty badly in November, and she's still getting headaches from it. Like, these characters cannot get up and continue a battle when they've just been knocked out, and we all do it. Like, we've got to get them moving again, but it's just so unrealistic.
I'm just looking at the time, and I'm aware that I want to make sure that you guys have plenty of time to ask questions. So I think in about 5 minutes, we will hand it over to the audience for questions. So if you have a question, if you want to start making your way to the microphone in the center aisle, that would be fantastic. Before we do, though, I've got so many questions that I haven't asked. So I think one of the things that I was really fascinated about in your books is the themes of free will and willpower. And I think particularly in the Midoran Chronicles, those things play a very specific role, but they are really important across all of your books. And this idea of an individual having the power to make choices, and often your villains, the sort of awful things they're doing, is taking that power away from your lovelier characters. So I wonder if you could talk a bit about, yeah, that idea of having free will and having the willpower to sort of stand up for what you believe in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one of the most fundamental things that we all have. Like, if we have nothing else in the world, I like to think we have free will. And that is, you know, we have this agency in us to make decisions. And sometimes, you know, sometimes that does get taken away from us in ways that we can't control. And when it does, it can be, you know, it can be horrible and it can be, you know, it is traumatic. And that's what happens, I guess, what I do with the villains in my books. You know, villains, they want to seize power and they want to take that in some way or another. And so it's kind of like light and dark. You know, I give my characters this ability to make choices and to make decisions, but I also give them the ability to have to learn from them. And you know, sometimes they're going to make the wrong decisions with that willpower. This is, again, a human thing. We get this gift of choice, but we have to, you know, that's a responsibility as well. And so my characters learn sometimes the hard way what that means to be able to make, you know, to make these decisions and make these choices, while at the same time the villains are trying to snatch it away anyway. So it's like this all comes back to the hero journey in a sense, and the growth that I try to give my characters over the course of the series. And it's funny with the Midoran Chronicles, because this is kind of spoilery territory, I'll try and say it without that, but when Alex, the main character, finds out just how much free will she has, she's kind of really unimpressed. She's like, this is not cool. and then she kind of learns throughout the series that, hang on, this is the most powerful thing that I could have, to be able to have this choice and to be able to have this strength in me. So
because she is kind of the chosen one, and there is this like sort of prophecy about her, but there's every chance that she's not going to be able to fulfill it. And she has all of these points throughout the books where it's really up to her to kind of figure it out. And she doesn't always get it right. And so, yeah, amazing. I'm looking at this long line of people here. So we might hand it over to the audience.
Since I first read the Akane... Since I first read Akane, I've always really wanted a book from Caden's perspective about the whole series. Are you ever going to do something like that?
Oh, so I think the question was if I would ever write the series from Caden's perspective. Is that right? I love Caden. I have such a soft spot for Caden. If you've had a chance to read Caldoris, you'll know that scene towards the end, it just was like, my heart. I kind of built up 7 books to get to that moment. As for a perspective from him, I haven't ever thought of it. I certainly have toyed with the idea of short stories or like novellas from his perspective, but I feel like at least for the moment, I'm done with that world for now, because I'm very, very excited about the world I'm currently in and how expansive it will be going forward. So it's more a matter of carving out time and figuring out deadlines and publishers and different requirements. So I will never say never, because I love Caden so much, but we'll see. I can't say yes, but I also won't say no.
Excellent. Next question.
When you started the Midoran Chronicles, did you already had an idea of like the depth of Avon's characterization, or did that slowly come about when the series progressed?
All I knew was that I'd been reading a lot of books where the villain was kind of so villainous and so obviously like unattractive and you know, mean and like really like all the really obvious kind of villainy things. And I was like, I want someone who is really nice to look at, someone who is really charming, someone who you kind of want to like in a way. And you get a bit torn about it, especially in Dracora. Mind you, that did surprise me a bit. I was like, why am I liking my villain? This is not supposed to happen. which obviously then led into Caldoris. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go with it. We're just going to see where this goes. And to be honest, with anything with the Midoran Chronicles, I had no planning about any of it whatsoever. So I only had the foundational knowledge of knowing I wanted him to be charming. I wanted him to have this like mesmerizing appeal to him. But I also wanted to be like tainted. I wanted to be like, you know, like one of those really beautiful flowers that's deadly, like that kind of thing. That was what I was like, that's Avon.
I reread your books often, and there are so many small details that hint towards big plot twists. How did you write them into it?
I wish I could say I planned that.
So you did.
I did. I planned it so completely. Look, to be honest, I don't know. With the prison healer, it was easier because I knew I'm a very chronological writer. I write from beginning to end, but The Prison Healer is the first book I ever wrote the last couple of pages before anything else because I just so acutely knew how that was going to end. And so that meant, which was also very important because the foreshadowing in that book is so small. The hints are only there if you kind of reread it. And then you reread it and you're like, oh, this is so obvious. But I kind of, with that book, I worked really hard to make sure your attention was on this plot twist so that it was kind of obvious and it distracted you from this plot twist so that when you got to this one, you're like, hang on, I knew about that one, but I didn't, you know. So the foreshadowing in that sense, I made it heavier in some ways so that you were kind of directed in certain places. The Madoran Chronicles, I've got no idea how that happened. I remember writing Jo Corr and I was like, and again, I'm going to be so careful with spoilers, but I'm like, now that she's in this place, and I have two books that are already published that are set in stone and I can't go back and edit anything. How am I going to make this happen? And somehow I just kind of worked with, because we get the story, we get the background in the first book from DC. For anyone who hasn't read this series, I'm being so deliberately vague. For anyone who has, I'm hoping you are able to follow. And so we have the historical context, and I had to follow that so carefully in order to actually have certain stuff happen. And I feel like I just like had a stomach ulcer the entire time I wrote it. But yeah, and Whisper, I don't even remember how, to be honest, I don't remember those books enough to be able to answer the question. So I'm like, it was part planned for those, but also very much not, and very, very, I feel like at a writer's festival, I should have a better like answer as to how to write, but I'm like, I just don't know how to write at all.
I actually have just a quick follow-up question to that one. Have you ever kind of like had a plan and then once a few of the books have come out, you've gone, oh, actually the readers really love this, I'm going to have to change what I'm doing here, or do you ever sort of change things up in response to how the books have been received?
No, not from readers. I feel like that's a dangerous line to tread. I also think, you know, I can't afford to write a book that I think someone else will like. I need to write a book that I will like and hopefully other people will like it. But writing books isn't easy. You are stuck in this world for so long while you're writing it, but then you're editing it and editing it and editing it. And if you don't love it enough to do that, if you add something in for the sake of someone else, then and it kind of can grow to resentment, and that's dangerous. So I love that, you know, readers feel so passionate about things. So I guess a great example is if I would write a Caden story. I know so many people want that, and I know that I want that. But just because people want that and I want that doesn't mean I'm going to make it happen. So yeah. And also, you know, as authors, we have to be careful not to go looking for reviews that might say something like that, because that's also dangerous territory too. That's a reader space, not a writer space. So but from a non-reader perspective, so many times I have plans for my own books and they change. I will be like, this is what I'm going to do with my plot. And then my characters go, no, it's not. And I go, okay, we're going to go over here now. So that's terrifying.
Wonderful. Yes, sorry. I interrupted then and I apologise.
Because like all your series are very long, like especially the Madoran Chronicles, how do you keep the motivation and not like burn out in when you're writing it?
Well, I did burn out, but it was done by then. So much of it comes to especially with the longer series like the Madoran Chronicles, I was in love with those characters in that world. You know, it became such a part of me. I grew up writing, I mean, I was obviously not a kid, but I grew up as an author writing those books. So those ones will be always, even though I said before that I struggled to read the first book and the second book, to be honest, there is such nostalgia in it for me. It's like when you watch a TV show and it has like, what, 10 seasons, and you go back and watch the pilot and you're like, oh, that's right, this is really terrible, but I loved where everything began. And so, like Shadowhunters. Sorry, I really enjoyed that show, but I rewatched the pilot the other day. I was like, oh, what is this? No shade on it. Like, I really did enjoy it. But anyway,
just lost my total train of thought. But yeah, staying true to it, motivation and stuff. Sometimes, to be honest, sometimes motivation purely comes from having deadlines and knowing I need to continue because I'm contractually obligated. And that can kind of be the kick I need to keep going. But usually it's just purely out of love and motivation and knowing how much I love the world and the characters and want to see. It's also because sometimes when my plans go out the window, I have no idea how things are going to end and I need to know how a story is going to end. So I'm at that point in this book at the moment, and I know the ending, which is the next chapter, but I'm at this penultimate chapter. I've never said that word out loud before. I've used it in writing before, but it felt weird coming out of my mouth. And now I'm like, did I say it right? Anyway, and I'm like, huh, this is the only part of the book where I haven't actually known up until this point what is going to happen. And I was trying to write it on the plane, and I'm like, oh,
don't know.
I'm like, oh, okay. But because I've written, 110 odd thousand words up until now, I know the characters well enough, I know the world well enough, so I just have to.
I think we've got 4 minutes left, so I think we can do two more questions.
Hi, I really liked your Prison Healer books, and I was just wondering if you're going to write anything more in that world.
That's a great question. Next question?
Apparently we do have time for another two questions.
I'm not being mean. I'm just saying I can't answer you. I would love to answer you, and I would love to give you the answer you want to hear. And that's all I'll say on that. You what, sorry? Yeah. It's not a no.
It does sound like a bit of a teaser.
It's not a no. It's a not yet, but it's a not a not. Not later thing. It's a not, I'm not currently writing a Prison Healer book, but I might have plans for one.
Well, that sounds suitably intriguing.
What's your favourite of all the books you've written?
Oh no! That's like picking a favourite child. In the Prison Healer series, it would be The Blood Traitor. That book took everything out of me, and I love it just so much. I feel like a lot of the healing that Margot mentioned before is in that book. I really ripped the characters to shreds. I mentioned before the burnout thing, and I was kind of joking, but I also wasn't. I was in acute burnout at the time, and I had some very difficult life stuff happening while that book was happening in a very short period of time, and I just had to write the book very quickly. About 4 weeks I was given to write that book. I was told I had 3 months, but then suddenly I had 4 weeks. and so everything I bled into that book. And so it's really, I love it so much. I love the quest. I love the characters. I love everything about it. That's kind of like beauty from pain kind of thing. And in the Midoran Chronicles, I love Vardasia, but my heart really goes to Draycora, partly because of the dragons, or Dracons, but also because everything about that book surprised me. They were never meant to go, or Alex was never meant to go to the place that she goes, and that changed the... everyone's like, we know what you're talking about, but for those who don't, she goes somewhere she's not meant to go. And that changed the trajectory of the rest of the series for me. That a really important character came into the series who was never meant to be a main character, and he ended up being like the fan favourite character of the series, and none of that was meant to happen. And so that book is really special to me. And Whisper and Weapon, I mean, there's only two books. So I feel like I can't really, they're just the same. Choose them both.
It's so hard to choose, right?
Yeah.
So we have 1 minute left.
Okay.
So I just have one last question for you, because we do have a wonderful audience here tonight who, I'm sure there are some writers in the audience. I know we have a lot of poets here. What would your advice be to young writers?
Ooh. Oh, and did you say about 30 seconds?
you've got 1 minute. Go.
There's so many things I could say, but honestly, the most obvious thing is to read a lot. And I know that sounds silly, but read widely. Read outside of your genre, because you can't really know what you want to write unless you know what you like to read and also what you don't like to read. And you'll learn your voice that way, and you'll learn, how to write. Like I said before, I'd never wanted to be a writer. Like I never studied. Right. I mean, I took one academic writing class, but that's very different from fiction writing. It just taught me how to reference things at uni. It sounds really cool on a bio. It's really not impressive. And so, no offense to any academic writers. I meant me. I took an introductory class. So, actual academic writers, you guys are, you rock. But I didn't get that far. I'm like digging a hole.
Reading widely.
Reading widely. And just, you know, keeping a broad mindset about it and just dabbling as well. Like, I once heard that I'm going to butcher that quote, so I'm not even going to butcher it. You know, dabble, like, you know, I don't think I'm supposed to promote this, but we're all friends here. You know, dabble with fan fiction if you want. Like, a lot of writers start with fan fiction. It's a world that you recognize and you know, and you know, you can characters, but don't sell it. That's illegal. But, you know, you can dabble with it. I guess dip your toe in and just give it a go, because you'll never know if you don't actually try. So read a lot and jump in.
Oh, that is fantastic advice, I think. Will you all join me in thanking Lynette Noni for a fantastic discussion?
And Margot, who was amazing.
And Lynette will be signing her books over at the signing table, so please head to the book tent, get yourself a copy of all 12 of her books and get her to sign them. And if you have questions, I'm sure Lynette will be happy to answer them while she's signing your books as well if you didn't get to ask. So thank you so much.
Thank you.